Welcome to KSKA's A Closer Look. I'm Len Anderson. Today, we present the first of two programs on the ballot measures appearing on the August 24th primary ballot. In the next half hour, we'll focus on ballot measure number one, labeled by its creators as an anti-corruption measure, but described by its opponents as a gag law. Next week, KSKA will turn to ballot measure number two, involving abortions, parental notification, and possible physician punishment. In putting together today's A Closer Look, we encountered an unusual situation. Ballot Measure 1 organizers announced in June that because of the title and language adjustments made by Attorney General Dan Sullivan and Lieutenant Governor Craig Campbell as the state prepared the measure for the August 24th ballot, they would no longer actively campaign for it. Before Clean Team Alaska suspended its campaigning for Ballot Measure 1, Ken Jacobus and Jason Klein participated in a May 6th panel discussion on the proposed act with two opponents before a gathering of the Resource Development Council. Klein emphasized the no lobbying from public funds element of the ballot measure.
We're hoping to stop publicly funded lobbyists. The idea that you can use taxpayer dollars to fund someone to go down and get more taxpayer dollars, this is an unhealthy, cyclical growth of government that the state cannot afford.
Klein said that Ballot Measure 1 also has a purpose beyond just controlling influence upon elected officials.
So this is a practice, if we're going to limit government, limit the scope of what it does, it's a step towards doing that. And make no question, this initiative does hope to limit the growth of government and curb that. And I would implore anyone to tell me about some process that's doing more about that than this initiative will do.
Attorney Jacobus concentrated on the proposed political participation restrictions upon individuals or organizations who receive contracts or government money.
I'm going to shorten up my talk because of the time available. These issues are so important, a lot of time is necessary to discuss them and consider them. The anti-corruption initiative has three main points. As mentioned, it bans the use of taxpayer funds to hire private lobbyists to lobby for more taxpayer funds. It does not prohibit state or municipal officers from contacting legislators and asking the legislator for funds and laws to satisfy local government or state government needs. I won't talk about it any more than that because you can read the initiative. The other thing is that public contracts are to be placed on the internet in a user-friendly, searchable form so that the information is available to the public. This is already done in several states and by at least one municipality in the state of Alaska. It's not a big it's maybe a slightly big project, but it's important to have this information available to the public. I won't discuss this point either, but the third point I'll discuss a little bit more. It places limitations on public contracts, and what it says is that any entity which hires a legislator or staff member may not get a public contract for 2 years after that person's term is completed. There's a huge exception to this, which maybe almost swallows the rule here. But if the legislator or staff member was engaged in or certified for a certain profession or occupation prior to becoming a legislator, that legislator can continue on in that profession or the same occupation with the same employer or a different employer without becoming subject to that exception. It doesn't apply to that. What it really does, the whole idea is to ensure that the public contract is not awarded, and then the legislature or staff member immediately compensated with a job in return for directing the public contract to a certain company. Okay, that's what we're trying to do. The initiative was attempted to be carefully written to address one type of corruption, which is corruption in the eyes of almost everybody, and that's which is trading public contracts for political contributions or jobs. This is really all the initiative does when you come right down to the bottom of it. Now, I was going to spend some time analyzing the particular provisions of it and some of the statements that have been made, but Clean Team Alaska provided something which says 10 lies about Proposition 1. I prefer to say 10 misrepresentations, misconceptions, whatever. I don't want to accuse the opponents of lying. But read these. These correctly state what the effect of the initiative is. And it's basically what the initiative will not do, which people claim it's going to do. That was going to be the entire second part of my discussion, but you've got it in paper. Third part of my discussion is that I believe that enacting this initiative is the right thing to do. And there have been a lot of false claims which have been made. Now, even if you accept the false claims, there are certain things you need to remember. And just remember all of these when you consider it. First, everyone has the constitutional right to free speech, political association, and to petition the government for redress of grievances. Anyone will be able to talk to any elected or appointed official or government body to try to resolve their own problems or seek legislation or other government action of any type. The initiative does not interfere with this, and it cannot interfere with this as a constitutional matter. This law is not a gag law, as it's been called. People are as free after the law is enacted to communicate with the government as they were before. You can go to your city council and get your mill rate reduced. You're not gagged. The only thing is just no trading public contracts for jobs or campaign contributions. That's all it is. It's not intended to shut anybody up, and it does not shut anybody up. It can't shut anybody up as a matter of the Constitution of the State of Alaska and the federal constitution. Second thing is this is a complicated area, and of course the initiative is not perfect. And as was quoted to me before the meeting, don't let the perfect become the enemy of the good. What can happen if there are any problems with it, and some problems have been discussed with me already, the legislature is free to amend the initiative at any time. It can't repeal it for 2 years. It can make changes any time if there are any problems with it, such as dues to trade associations. If that's a problem, that can be dealt with at the beginning of the 2011 legislative session. Anyway, amendment is all right at any time, and any problems which exist in something which, of course, is complicated and can't be perfect can be dealt with. Third, the initiative has a severability clause, and if there's anything wrong with the initiative, constitutionally wrong, the court will simply take that portion out of the initiative and the remainder of the law is given effect. So anything that's wrong with it can be carved out by the court or, you know, by the legislature. Finally, since the initiative has criminal sanctions for violation, it's construed in favor of the person against whom the law is applied. Anything which is arguable is interpreted in favor of the alleged violator. This principle provides further protection to someone to whom the law might be applied. So there's another protection there. Basically, the initiative hurts no one, but it does affect those people and entities who have been feeding at the public trough for decades without anybody interfering with them because of political trade-offs, campaign contributions, friendships maybe, and do not want their feeding disturbed. That's all. Changes are needed. The point is, we do not want public contracts traded for public jobs or political public contracts traded for any jobs or political contributions. We would like to see more competitive bidding and fewer no-bid contracts. We want information available to the Alaska voters by posting public contracts on the internet. And as a basic bottom line, all of this, we want to increase the private businesses in the state of Alaska and decrease the government expenditures, and the government influence over what all of us are trying to do here in this room, and that's to develop the resources of the state of Alaska so that we have a good future. This will help. Thank you very much. We'd appreciate your vote on this, vote yes on Proposition 1.
You're listening to KSKA's A Closer Look. Today's program is on ballot measure 1 that will be decided in the August 24th state primary. The previous speaker was Ken Jacobus, one of two members of Clean Team Alaska and backers of the ballot measure, who appeared at a May 6th panel discussion before the Resource Development Council. As stated earlier, proponents of ballot measure 1 are no longer actively campaigning. In June, Clean Team Alaska Chairman Dick Randolph issued a written statement saying the group was suspending the Yes on One campaign. Randolph charged, quote, the lieutenant governor capriciously and unilaterally revised the ballot title language in order to give unions and the Alaska Municipal League an advantage in the upcoming election. The title used during the 2007 initiative drive for signatures was, quote, an initiative prohibiting the use of public funds for election campaigns, also prohibiting campaign contributions by holders of government contracts. In his suspension announcement, Randolph wrote that in May of 2008, when then-Lieutenant Governor Parnell verified the signatures, Parnell had also approved the original ballot title and proposition summary. Randolph continued that if the title and description needed changing, the state should have done so when the initiative was verified, not now before the election. Opponents of the proposition have said the title and language used to collect initiative signatures was confusing to those who signed and would be to voters at the polls. The title, as it will appear on the August 24th ballot, now reads, Initiative Prohibiting the Use of Public Funds to Lobby or Campaign, and Prohibiting Holders of Government Contracts and Family Members from Making Political Contributions. On July 9th, three panelists spoke against ballot Measure 1 before the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. Attorney Jeffrey Feldman presented the opposition's legal interpretation.
The problem with the initiative is that once you get past the title, everything that follows in the succeeding five pages of single-spaced text is filled with mischief, I think is a fair description, and it imposes restrictions on Alaskans of all stripe and nature, urban and rural, large and small, business and individuals, governments, and if you take them in the aggregate, what it really has the effect of doing is silencing and prohibiting the participation in our political system of a vast community of Alaskans that I think most of us would agree are the very people that we want to encourage to participate. Small business owners, people who work for major businesses, government and municipal and village entities. I mean, these are people that are literally our friends, our neighbors, our colleagues, and the initiative simply stated would have the effect of precluding them from participating in the political process in a variety of ways, all under the banner, supposedly, of trying to prevent corruption. The biggest consequence for businesses, business owners, and people who have any interest in a business at all, is the restriction that the initiative imposes on participating in the political system by anyone who holds a government contract, in particular a no-bid government contract. And when I say anyone, I don't mean just the business owner, just the business itself, the business entity, or the business owner. The initiative defines the group of people that are covered by this prohibition as, first of all, anybody who holds a 5% interest in the business. So you could be just a very small stakeholder in the business, but if the business gets a contract, then you cannot make a contribution. You cannot support a candidate. You cannot participate. Your voice, at least as manifested by your pocketbook, your voice has been silenced. And it even goes beyond that insofar as it applies not only to the person who owns a 5% stake in the business, but it applies to that person's extended family. And I know Peggy's going to talk about that, but just to understand how mischievous the initiative is drafted, family member is defined to include, bear with me here because I have to read it, spouse, child, spouse's child, son-in-law, daughter-in-law, parent, sibling, grandparent, grandchild, stepbrother, stepsister, stepparent, parent-in-law, brother-in-law, sister-in-law, aunt, uncle, niece, nephew, guardian, and in the spirit of inclusiveness, domestic partners. Anybody you know or live with or sleep with or have any blood relationship to is similarly prohibited from making a contribution to a political candidate if the business in which you happen to own a 5% interest also holds a government contract. And the government contract, you know, we think about these, you know, we hear the word no-bid government contract, and it sounds like, well, you know, gee, that sounds bad, a big government contract. Well, it doesn't have to be a big government contract. First of all, the initiative imposes the restriction on any contract or the holder of any contract, the value of which is $500 or more. Well, $500 is a pretty low threshold. It would apply to a simple mining lease, apply to grants held by nonprofit corporations or nonprofit organizations. And it's not an overstatement to say that it simply would include a vast number of Alaskans about whom it would be very tenuous to suggest that their contributions somehow corrupt the system. If my firm has a contract with the state of Alaska to provide legal services, and I own 5% of my firm, my step-brother-in-law making a contribution to his state representative, I don't think that threatens the integrity of our political process.
Peggy Wilcox of the Stop the Gag Law Coalition further defined family. She held up a family chart.
This is my immediate family. When you map it out, it ends up being 54 individuals. I've got one husband, two uncles, two parents, three in-laws, four grandparents, six nieces, 14 nephews, eight aunts, seven siblings, and seven sibling spouses. All of those people would be prohibited from giving a contribution to this particular candidate. So in the case of, say, let's think about my father. He's 89 years old. He's a World War II veteran who has lived in Alaska since 1921. He's born in Juneau. He is adamantly pro-life. So if I happen to hold a contract in excess of $500, my father would then be prohibited from giving to whatever pro-life candidate he chooses to give a contribution to.
Wilcox continued with more examples of exclusion as she perceived them within ballot measure one.
If I had a cabin next to a wildfire and for some reason the smoke jumpers stayed at my place and say they broke stuff, they gave me $1,000. I didn't ask them to move in. I was happy they were there. They saved my cabin. They gave me $1,000. I didn't bid on that. Is it payment for services? Or let's think Crowley Marine in some community in Alaska, on the Yukon, on Cook Inlet, in Southeast. If I'm running, let's just pretend it's mom and pop gas station on the water, and I sell gas to the troopers or to Fish and Game because I'm the only supply of gas around, and I sell them more than $500 worth of stuff, I then have, a no-bid government contract because there's nobody to compete with me. I hire two kids, high school kids, to pump gas. Under the no-bid government contract, I have to sign something that says I and my immediate family, I have to look at this one because it's very broad. I, my immediate family, my employees, their immediate families, my immediate family, and any vendor to my business is then prohibited from giving a campaign contribution, not just to the ultimate arbiter of the contract, but to any candidate, state, municipal, state level and down, school board. So I've got my 54 people here, and then I've got my 16-year-old employees, however many people that goes along with him, taking a whole bunch of people out there. But then it also includes the vendors. So those are the guys that are selling me, I don't know, the gas that they ship in and refill my gas station with. The people that maybe sell me sandwiches so that when the tour boat that comes through to take people out halibut fishing, they can buy their sandwiches. The people that stock my soda machine. The people that sell me ice. Pretty much, it prohibits us all from giving to state and local candidates.
You're listening to KSKA's A Closer Look and the first of two programs devoted to the two ballot measures appearing in the state August 24th primary election. Today's A Closer Look focuses on ballot measure one, which is titled as an initiative prohibiting the use of public funds to lobby or campaign and prohibiting holders of government contracts and family members from making political contributions. Backers of the proposal have suspended their Yes on One campaign. The comments supporting ballot measure 1, heard earlier on this program, were made before the suspension at a May 6 panel discussion on the proposed act with two opponents before a gathering of the Resource Development Council. That panel discussion was broadcast over KSKA on May 13th. The opponents' statements just heard occurred at an Anchorage Chamber of Commerce luncheon on July 9th. Attorney Feldman expanded on what he perceived was the measure's impact as well as the possible constitutionality questions.
The initiative also would affect organizations like the Alaska Municipal League, the Resource Development Council, insofar as it restricts those organizations from participating in terms of lobbying, in terms of going to Juneau and explaining to legislators what might be good or bad about a law. And the reason why those organizations would be restricted is because each of those organizations, like many others in the state, have as members public entities. The Alaska Municipal League obviously has municipalities, which are members. They are public entities. Likewise, the Resource Development Council has entities that are public organizations. And since they're members of public organizations, they likewise would be precluded from going to Juneau or even to Congress and explaining, for example, why ANWR should be opened. Again, I think it's hard to make a convincing argument that that kind of a restriction well serves the goal of prohibiting or restricting corrupt activity in our state. And then finally, the initiative runs afoul of the Constitution. It violates the legislature's right to appropriate funds for public purpose. By Constitution, our legislature has that right. If the legislature wants to spend $1 million and lobby Congress to open ANWR, by Constitution, the legislature has that right. This initiative would conflict with that right. The initiative likewise violates a variety of First Amendment protections. The United States Supreme Court has been very protective, as I'm sure most of you know, on political campaign activity. The ban here is very broad and runs afoul, I think, of the more recent decisions of the United States Supreme Court. Likewise, the restrictions on participation run afoul of protected First Amendment political speech, which, again, our court has been very protective of. And then finally, it runs afoul of the provision in our state constitution in Article 2, Section 12, by which the legislature is given the sole ability or authority to define the qualifications for the members of its bodies. And so to the extent that this initiative sets to impose restrictions or conditions on serving in the legislature, it runs afoul of that constitutional provision. And enactment of this, the only good thing that will come of the enactment of this initiative, quite honestly, is that it will be great for lawyers, because each of these provisions is destined to trigger litigation.
Beyond her involvement opposing ballot measure 1, Wilcox is the political organizer for the Alaska Public Employees Association and Alaska Federation of Teachers. According to the Alaska Public Offices Commission, the association has contributed $35,000 to the anti-ballot measure 1 campaign. As of July 21st, the Stop the Gag Law campaign had collected over $825,000. According to the initiative language, unions that make collective bargaining agreements are considered contract holders and thus would fall under ballot measure 1 restrictions. Don Smith, an Anchorage conservative and a member of the school board, backs the measure. Smith has sent emails to the media decrying the amount of money being spent by the opponents and listing contributors.
I was just astonished when I pulled a report and discovered that as of the 21st of last month, July, this group of organizations raised $828,728.01. You know, I've been around politics a long, long time, and I know that by the what they call the seven-day report, which comes due here in another couple of weeks, that'll probably be over $1 million. You know, and I guess the question is, what in the world are these organizations so deathly afraid of that they would put that kind of money up against a campaign that absolutely is not being waged?
Smith says he's troubled by the dominance of union contractors.
The unions and the teachers' unions and all these groups, there's virtually no non-union entity contributing any money to this campaign, and they just seem to be terrified that their gravy train somehow is going to be interrupted by the passage of this law. And all this law does is tries to say, look, if you're a contractor and you're doing business with a governmental agency, you can't be donating money and furthering your piece of the gravy train while you've got the contract.
While the bulk of the anti-measure contributions through July 21st did come from unions and teacher associations, over $100,000 came from the Alaska Municipal League, Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association, and the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. Josh Appleby, Stop the Gag Law campaign manager, doesn't disagree with Smith's contribution tally, but Appleby says the money is needed to counter through media what is an unclear proposal with far-reaching effects upon the general public.
While we have no active opponent in this campaign, ballot measure 1 will still appear on the primary ballot. And it's just so important that we get to as many Alaskans as possible and have them understand how this measure will impact them and their family and their ability to communicate with their government.
Appleby says it was natural for the unions and educational groups to be the first to organize against the initiative.
Unions, they're in a unique position. They're already organized and already seen this ballot initiative as it's come across other states and currently landed in Alaska. They were the first to see its effects in its original campaigns in Colorado and South Dakota. And because of their organization, they were the first ones to be able to quickly organize and get behind it. But as you've seen from our website, we have over 75 groups, associations, and communities across the state that have all registered our opposition to ballot measure number one.
Appleby says the Alaska initiative appears financially linked to those outside efforts.
In our research, and really you can go onto our website, Howie Rich is a real estate developer from New York City that is behind organizations like Americans for Limited Government and several other organizations under different names in different states. And it's our understanding that he has been pushing this initiative in these states across the nation and is behind the principles behind the actual language of the initiative.
In May, the Alaska Public Offices Commission called for Alaskans for Open Government, a nonprofit contributing to the initiative effort, to disclose its donors. A major one was Americans for Limited Government in Fairfax, Virginia, and it listed Rich as its president. The same organization contributed to nearly identical initiatives in Colorado and South Dakota. However, in those states, the amounts were several hundred thousand dollars and not disclosed until after the elections. In Colorado, the initiative passed but was declared unconstitutional, and in South Dakota, it was narrowly defeated. Recently, Alaska law changed. It now requires any group created to influence elections to register with the state and disclose its contributors. The suspension of the active pro-ballot Measure 1 campaign came shortly after the financial disclosure to AIPAC. However, despite the suspension, Ballot 1 proponents Dick Randolph and Ken Jacobus have agreed to participate in this Wednesday's Hometown Alaska on KSKA at 2 p.m. Josh Appleby will also appear on the program. Once again, the measure, as it will appear on the ballot, is entitled Initiative Prohibiting the Use of Public Funds to Lobby or Campaign and Prohibiting Holders of Government Contracts and Family Members from Making Political Contributions. Additional information from both sides of the ballot measure is available by going to the Clean Team Alaska and the Stop the Gag Law websites. Links to both groups are on the KSKA.org website next to the posting of this edition of A Closer Look. You've been listening to KSKA's A Closer Look, this week focusing on Ballot Measure 1 in the August 24th primary. On next week's program, we'll present Ballot Measure 2, entitled Abortion for Minor Requires Notice to or Consent from Parent or Guardian or Through Judicial Bypass. A Closer Look is a production of KSKA Anchorage. For KSKA, this is Len Anderson, thanking you for listening.